Jesus, you are the bread of life. Why am I so hungry? Why am I so hungry? As I read the gospel for today, there are these three images that came to my mind. The first is from a book called Holy Hunger. Margaret was a little girl growing up in a wealthy family, and eating at the table was filled with rules. She was too afraid to enjoy these and savor this fine cuisine that was served to her, scared she was using the wrong fork, putting her elbow on the table, or didn't have her napkin on her lap. And later in life, Margaret began to overeat, not because she was hungry, but because she was freed to eat. And overeating became a way to numb her feelings of loneliness and grief that she couldn't bear. And she found a way to fill up her emptiness with food. And so there is this image from this book that she describes herself dressed in her worst clothes, covering her head, going to the grocery store to buy quantities of pastries and chocolate, and sitting in her car and eating compulsively. And from deep inside her, there was another hunger, one that food could not satisfy. Jesus, you are the bread of life. Why am I so hungry? The second image that came to me, and that was after watching a documentary about emperor penguins. You know, those awkward-looking, waddling birds? After they have their babies, one parent covers and protects the young. It's an icy landscape, and there are predators around, while the other one, rather exhausting to watch, waddles to the ocean, dives in, fishes for fish for themselves, stores some in their beak, waddles back, feeds their young, and then swaps with the other parent, and they take turns. And it seems like the baby emperor penguin is never satisfied. It's constantly squawking, waiting for more food. And you're wondering through this whole thing, can the parents keep up with this baby? And you realize how fragile life is, that it's balancing on this tightrope. Will there be enough? Will the parents have enough energy to keep going? Will there be enough fish to feed the young? And life-giving food is not guaranteed. Many young die hungry. And a third image from a Ukrainian Orthodox church that I found myself at one day. And the bread and the wine for the Eucharist is prepared in a different way, behind this wall of icons where the priest hovers and combines a round of bread into the chalice. And then at the time of communion, two servers come and hold this long red cloth. And one by one, baptized persons longing for food from God come forward and lean almost bird-like over the red cloth. And the priest takes a golden spoon, spoons out bread and wine from the chalice, and offers it to each person. And there is this moment where you wonder, is it going to be too much? Is it going to be enough? And in this very human moment, not quite unlike taking wine from a chalice in our tradition, something of Christ's life is ingested, and by faith we are sustained for our journey. Images, three images of hunger, of too much food, of not enough food, of emptiness, and of the fragility of life and faith. Jesus, you are the bread of life. Why am I so hungry? In John's gospel, this is the day after Jesus fed the multitude. And the crowd is following him, seeking more food. Were they seeking to understand the source of the food? We're not sure. But they approach Jesus with a story of food that their ancestors received and they believed was provided for by Moses. And Jesus expands their story. It was not Moses, after all, it was God. And it didn't only occur in a distant past, but Jesus, embodying the presence of Christ, offers heavenly food afresh and anew in that time. And Christ does not limit the benefits of his presence to that gathered crowd, not for that group alone, but it is for the life of the world. And it is always enfleshed. Let me unpack that just a little bit, using some of the concepts from Alexander Schmemann's book, For the Life of the World. He talks about that there is no distinction between material and spiritual. And sometimes when we read the Gospels or when we talk about our lives and about theology, we keep them distinct. But Schmemann would say to us, no, humanity must eat to live, not only physically, but spiritually. He uses this analogy that we take in parts of our world and they are transformed into us in our bodies. So later today, we will eat probably too much turkey and mashed potato and cranberry sauce. And as we take it in, it becomes cells and neurons and ligaments and bone. And when we overlay this with the biblical story of this banqueting image, where we gather around the table, all of us, enough room for everyone in our world, on our earth. At this place, all food is God-given. At this place, it is all given for communion with God. All that exists is God's gift to us, exists to make God known to us. Imagine it is divine love made food, made life for all human beings. And so this table is a sacrament. Your tables at home are sacraments. The tables last night were sacraments. The food that we eat is food of God, communing with God for our very life. What a gift. We are hungry for God. And yet in this fragile world, when today we experience and name the things we are grateful for, we also hold together our unfulfilled hungers and longings. And my friends, at this table, and I hope at the tables of our homes, there is room for all, for our thankfulness and for our longing. I love the way Richard Rohr writes, "We do not need to be afraid of the depths and the breadths of our own life, of what this world offers us or asks of us. We are given permission to become intimate with our own experiences and to learn from them." And I love this line. Like Christ, we are all indeed wounded and resurrected at the same time. Thankful and hungry. And the paradox is this, that when we are able to be with our sense of emptiness and longing, we begin to be filled. Margaret's story ends as a woman on a recovery path, where the impulse when she feels empty, uncomfortable, to go to the pantry for food shifted to sit and ask, what is this emptiness about? What is it that I am really hungering for? What would I be feeling right now if I weren't so preoccupied with food or work or achievement or love? And she discovered that her longing is ultimately holy. I'd like to end with a poem by John O'Donohue called Longing. Blessed be the longing that brought you here and that quickens your soul with wonder. May you have the courage to listen to the voice of desire that disturbs you when you have settled for something safe. May you have the wisdom to enter generously into your own unease, to discover the new direction your longing wants you to take. May the forms of your belonging in love, creativity, and friendship be equal to the grandeur and the call of your soul. May you come to accept your longing as divine urgency, and may you know the urgency with which God longs for you. Amen.